additional special thanks on behalf of the court for accepting this appointment. Thank you. Now, the case is taken under advisement, and the court will proceed to the fourth case, Aurora Lamp and Lighting versus International Trading Corp. Mr. Levin?
Good morning, judges. I've had the opportunity to practice before this court every few years in my time in private practice, both as an appellee and an appellant, and I've won, I've lost, but it's always been a privilege to be here. I can't say that today. Because essentially what this case is about in part is my inability to comply with the orders of the district court. I also take no joy in being here because what it's also about is my complaints against an order entered by Judge Gotchel, who I generally believe to be a credit to the district court, who I have understood to be a compassionate judge, to be a diligent judge. And I think what ultimately happened here was after a very long contentious call with contentious and unreasonable parties, Judge Gotchel essentially became exasperated and entered an order, and in entering that order failed to comply with the standards for dismissal. The order was ostensibly entered based upon the failure to comply with a previous discovery order entered in March, wherein I was ordered to provide answers to interrogatories, requests to admit, and production of documents. I think the record is plain that the answers to interrogatories were completed on time. Judge Gotchel went through them on the record. The interrogatories were there. I don't think there's any question that the request to admit or that the request for production of document response was sent to the defendants and that they failed to take any action to review the documents produced for approximately 50 requests for production of documents. The court also failed to consider a motion for enlargement of time, and it was essentially considered in part in the motion to dismiss. This court, in reviewing the issue of dismissal of cases for either under Rule 41 or Rule 37, has indicated that the touchstone is proportionality, and that is determined by a review of the facts, and that a dismissal, in a sense, I would submit to the court, is effectively a death sentence for a case. And as a consequence, the court has indicated that it looks very hard at dismissal. And it's essentially a last resort. It's a last resort in instances where the parties either are refuse to abide by the court's rule, or one of the parties has taken an action which essentially prevents the court from continuing to make a reasonable adjudication of the case by intentional destruction of documents or by intentionally failing to comply with court orders. Now, I think there is a real question in this case. There's no real question in this case that in this circuit, the Ball versus City of Chicago case provides the analysis. I think there is a question, however, whether this dismissal was under Rule 41 or Rule 37. And I submit to the court that it really could not have been a Rule 41 dismissal, that the real sole issue in the case was the compliance with the court's order of March, and that the other matters were sort of thrown in to essentially buttress a dismissal that was not justified under Rule 37.
Mr. Levin, I agree that the court might not have applied the correct standard under 37, but she also dismissed under Rule 41 and seems to have applied the correct standard there. That's the problem here.
Well, except that there was nothing on Rule 41 there. There are certain items that were discussed. The failure to amend the jurisdictional from Citizen, that was dealt with. The other matters were essentially dealt with by the court and was not a matter. I mean, the court had disposed of those months before, and they were really not at issue. The only thing that was really at issue that day was the compliance with the order. I submit to the court, had the request for production of documents response been submitted on April 30th as required instead of 3 weeks later, the court would not have done it. The court went through there, and essentially, if you look at the record, none of the Rule 41 was considered by the court until she was making her ruling. And I think it's more evidence of her exasperation with the case generally and her general level of exasperation than anything else. I think if you take a look at the Rule 41 claims, they were not really before the court. They had been previously dealt with. And it is a Rule 37, and as a Rule 37, it fails. I think the other thing to be considered, and even under Rule 41, I think that the appellee goes into great length to discuss the claims. I think the real issue is, what was the prejudice? And I submit to the court that there has been no prejudice shown, and I think that's really the critical issue. What was the prejudice of the case? This was a case that was 14 months old. During that approximately 14 months, it was in a holding pattern for approximately 5 months for the judge to rule on a motion to dismiss. There was no prejudice to the case, and there was no analysis for alternate remedies. This is a last resort. The judge failed to consider other sanctions that would have been appropriate, and she essentially just got rid of the case without the necessary analysis under Ball. I will reserve the balance of my time. Thank you, Judge.
Mr. Gaffin?
Thank you, Your Honor. Before I address the merits of the dismissal, there's another issue we have to discuss, and it is, I think we're in the wrong court. This case, and it dawned on me last night, should be in the Federal Circuit. The complaint states a claim for patent, a declaration for patent invalidity. And my understanding of the rules is that if the complaint states a claim arising under the patent laws, all appeals, even those under non-patent issues, go to the Federal Circuit. And I apologize, I didn't pick this up earlier, but the light bulb went off last night when I was preparing for this argument, and I'm arguing in the Sixth Circuit tomorrow on a copyright case where there's a jurisdictional issue, and I was doing some additional research, and the light bulb went off. And I think we're in the wrong place. And I guess maybe it's, again, one more example of the plaintiff not doing its homework, not following the rules, not being careful.
How about you?
I do too. I admit it. I missed it. I missed it on this one.
Takes two to tango in this
court. I missed it on this one, but I'm bringing it to the court's attention now. There's a remedy, but that doesn't mean...
Both sides may have 7 days to submit a response to the issue of jurisdiction. And you can... So we'll put that aside, and you can go to the merits of the...
I was going to ask if the court wanted supplemental briefing, and I've got my answer. And I was going to ask whether we should go on, because I do know the law that under 28 U.S.C. 1631, you can transfer a case in the interest of justice, and I'll say you're not going to meet that standard here. And the Seventh Circuit has said if the case is a sure loser or has no merit, it shouldn't be transferred. And that's one of the cases, the Phillips case out of this circuit. What we really have here on the merits is a failure to abide by the three R's of legal practice: rules, responsibility, and respect. The rules, how we play, what we must follow, respect for the legal system, for the court, for other litigants, and responsibility for one's own action and promises.
Mr. Gaffin, you argued in the briefs that the plaintiff never produced documents.
That's correct.
And the plaintiff replied that he made them available, albeit late, but that you never came to inspect them.
untrue. My May 18th letter, which is part of the appellate transcript, appellate appendix, I can give you the page number in a second. I write a letter on May 18th, and I say, you only have a couple hundred pages of documents, copy them and send them to me immediately.
Well, are you contending that the plaintiff is obliged to make photocopies for you? Why wouldn't it be enough to make them available for review?
Considering the distance I would have to travel from Grand Rapids, Michigan to Chicago, and the time it would take compared to the cost of copying documents, which I would pay for, Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 1 says let's be efficient about this process. And it would be wholly inefficient to come here and look at a couple hundred pages of documents. And that's not my estimate. That is the estimate of the plaintiff. 275 pages of documents at 10 cents a copy. We can all do that arithmetic. It's a lot cheaper to say, please copy them, send them to me, and don't have me come over here. I never got a response to that letter.
In the letter, does it say I will pay for the photocopies?
I don't recall. I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. But we were producing documents the other way, and you've sat on the bench, you've practiced. If we copy 300 pages and he copied 300 pages, we sort of cancel out. It's a reasonable request, but I didn't get a response. It wasn't no, come here. It wasn't no, we won't copy them. It wasn't, we'll copy if you pay. I would have expected a response to that letter. I got none. Your Honor, you sat on the Ball case at the trial court level. You sat in Judge Gottschall's chair. Judge Flam, you sat on the appellate panel upholding Ball. What we have here is just a plain failure to abide by the rules, a lack of respect for the court, filing unsigned papers, not showing up for hearings late, not meeting any deadline picked by the court or by the court rules or by court order. Time and time again, we had repeated violations. And each time, and I'll say the court gave the plaintiff a free pass the first time. At the March hearing on our first motion to compel, the court said, no, I had asked for more severe sanctions, monetary relief. I had asked for a short deadline to respond to discovery, 1 week. Judge Gottschall said, no, let's give 5 weeks. Let's be reasonable about this. The court considered lesser sanctions and decided not to impose them, but gave the plaintiff a free pass, clearly in violation of, I think, Rule 37 would have required sanctions. Will the ultimate sanction and the warning be given at being given at that hearing? The prejudice to us is that we've been involved in this litigation for way too long, at way too great a cost, without any demonstration of its merits, and enough's enough. We all have to follow the rules. The Federal Rules of Civil Procedure don't say, as we heard the other side argue before Judge Gottschall, the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure for big law firms and big litigants, and my client's not a big litigant, and the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure for sole practitioners. It doesn't work that way. We all have to follow the rules. We followed the rules. They didn't. Sooner or later, you have to pay the consequence. I don't think this case, I think it would be wrong for this court to second-guess a trial judge sitting in that chair, listening, feeling, touching the lawsuit, seeing the litigants, seeing the lawyers, and making a decision. Shouldn't second-guess the trial judge. That just sends the wrong message. That just creates disrespect for the court, allows people not to follow the rules, and allows people not to take responsibility for their own conduct and their own actions. And what I'll ask is the court to uphold the dismissal. And when you consider the jurisdictional issue under 1631, find that it is not in the interest of justice to transfer this case, if it is to be transferred at all. And I think the case law, unfortunately, will point that out. Not in the interest of justice to transfer the case on this record, because what's going to happen at the Federal Circuit then is the Federal Circuit will apply Seventh Circuit procedural law on the dismissal. And you're in the best position to make that determination as opposed to the Federal Circuit. Thank you.
Till then.
Mr. Gaffin represents to the court that it was inconvenient for him, admitting that the documents were made available 3 weeks after the date, but approximately a month and a half before the dismissal, indicates that it was inefficient. counsel fails to let the court advise the court, that was local counsel. Local counsel has been involved in this case. Local counsel has appeared in this case. Local counsel has been involved, and local counsel is not 200 miles away, but a few blocks away at the corner of Wacker and State Street. They certainly could have made arrangements. So I don't think that that's a truthful representation to this court. The fact of the matter is, Judge Gottschall indicated, they wanted to see this case dismissed, and they were going to do everything they could to make the record look as bad as possible. Again, they claim that they were prejudiced. The case was dismissed in July. It was dismissed after approximately a year and a half. They have really demonstrated no prejudice. The documents were available 3 weeks before. Did I run?
No, you're fine.
Okay. The documents were made available. This case could have continued without any prejudice. If they were inconvenienced, there certainly could have been some monetary sanction, some sanction concerning documents not being allowed to be admitted. There are a whole gamut of sanctions available to deal with this. Dismissal was not an appropriate sanction. Also, the court, if you take a look at the ruling, there is no finding of willful and wanton conduct, and if you read the transcript, Judge Gottschall at some point says, well, there may have been reasons for the delay. And so essentially she indicates that there was no willful and wanton conduct. The sole issue is 3 weeks delay in producing documents on a case a year and a half old. And I think under any measure, and you know, if you take a look at the dismissal, the dismissal cases, it is egregious conduct. It is conduct that doesn't even come close to the conduct in this case. And therefore, I would ask the judge to reverse the order and remand the case to the district court. Thank you, judges.
Thank you.
Thanks, both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.